morning. My name is Michael McCusker. This very day, March 4th, 2021, mark your calendar, is the glorious date of the resurrection of Donald Trump to the imperial presidency of Trump USA. Or so is the prophecy of such soothsayers as QAnon, the Proud Boys, Hell's Angels, and assorted mentally defectives who fervently claim he was robbed of a White House throne by conspiratorial voter fraud plotted by left-wing anti-fafus. I inaugurate today's program with a couple of quotes. When the axe comes to the forest, the trees, seeing its wood handle, say to each other, "He is one of us." And that's an old Hasidic proverb. And from the edge, so many stupid people, so few meteors. Donald Trump and his hole in the head gang seem not at all perturbed about fallaciously reversing history or even acknowledging it as reality. After all, they have lied so much about everything, they cannot help but to dwell in alternative realities. Shake and fake, so to speak. This certainly applies to today's farcical flimflam that Trump will be recrowned without any sense of reality backing up that illusory distortion. The only significance to the fable, albeit its other trumped-up fantastical fabrications, is that March 4th was the date elected presidents were inaugurated until 1933, when FDR famously said, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." An alternative reality pandemic to the current virus that has so far killed more than 500,000 Americans is grotesquely spreading through a significant portion of American libidos, wormholing the national psyche, an absurd fiction so unbelievable it scorches perception more bizarre pathologically than old sci-fi or blotchy horror flicks. This hallucinatory inauguration of Donald Trump represents nothing less than a white supremacist attempt to seize the U.S. government and impose race hatred as a central core of governance, not unlike the apartheid regime that formerly ruled South Africa. To do that, they intend to abrogate the very Constitution and Bill of Rights that are the foundation of the nation's democracy, and which gave them the providence to be the ugly threat they currently are. These racist thugs are the very people our revered ancestors warned us about when they conceived the Constitution and Bill of Rights in genuine populist determination that the common people, distinctly separate from venomous rabble-roused mobs, are supreme over despots, dictators, and Trumpy tyrants. Our liberationary ancestors had the courage, insight, and perseverance to create this democracy, and it is up to us to have the courage to preserve it. "Who we are is who we were," John Quincy Adams said. He also surmised that an expected civil war, which occurred two decades afterward, might well be the final battle of the Revolution, which failed to free Black American slaves, and which might yet occur soon again, a second civil war, to revitalize the Declaration of Independence for all inhabitants of the USA, regardless of color or income. Democracy evolves. Like nationalism, capitalism, socialism, and communism, it is no more than part of a process of human development that is always evolving into something else. Ideals, which are usually expressions of concern that people have about the welfare of others, develop into ideologies that separate them as enemies. Ideologies do not usually translate well into reality, except they often make it appalling by the fervor with which they are promoted. the current political climate in the USA is incendiary, which is reflected by extreme right-wing ideologues and religious zealots who manipulate the democratic process to ultimately depose it. Their grim and vengeful visions of apocalyptic subordination excludes diversity, intelligence, and imagination, and blames the nation's problems on such interesting and rather progressive citizens as feminists, gays and lesbians, blacks, Hispanics, and recently arrived immigrants who hope for the future rather than cling to noxious images of the past. Dismal-souled millenarians intend that those who have not enjoyed the fruits of liberty and prosperity, few and bitter as they are, shall never reach the tree. It might be argued that such reactionary and grossly unjust attitudes are based on the fear Franklin Roosevelt warned about at his inauguration 88 years ago. But the fear, prejudice, and absolutism they inculcate should not be lightly dismissed if democracy is to continue as the country's fundamental structure and ideal. Political rights and liberties hard won by a previous generation are quite often eroded by successors who take them for granted without realizing how rare, necessary, and fragile they are. The history of an age is not about solutions to problems, but the struggle between several possible realities and the manner in which seekers for certain possibilities are deflected by others working toward other externalities. Capitalism, communism, fascism, any and all isms are constantly reforming, overlapping, and separating, and inherent within all of them are the human factors of power, avarice, corruption, violence, and asininity. The farther in time a form of rule or ideology moves from its founders, the less recognizable its foundations. No system is foolproof, and like every other organism, each moves toward decay, though sudden catastrophe or consequence might alter its trajectory or hasten its collapse or destruction. Mary Kempton once wrote, "The bearers of political myth of every era seem to carry in their hands the axe and the spade to execute and inter the myth of every previous era." Human beings cannot escape history is the Marxist idea, but human beings make their own history. And that is something I wrote. And now, by Dr. Robert Brake from Ocean Park, Washington. Politics, a noble calling. The word politics often conjures an image that is nasty, brutish, and depressing. Considering the general calamity caused by Donald J. Trump, it's not always easy to get beyond fear and worry, deep disappointment, and a sense of genuine outrage. We have lost sight of who we are as a people and as a nation, so we need to realize what American politics ought to be about, and we need to realize that as citizens, we have the power and ability to repair the fraying we have witnessed. Here's the problem. When Americans think about politics today, their first thought is that it is inherently dirty and undignified, that most politicians are corrupt and unprincipled, either knaves or fools, that those involved in politics only care about their self-interest and not at all about the interests of the country, that it takes no special skills to be a politician. In fact, the less experience, the better. That the problems we face as a nation are simple, the solutions obvious, so either stupidity or malice must explain why the solutions have yet not been implemented. Many people today have given up on politics, believing it to be irredeemable, and their frustrations are understandable. We are at a low ebb in the history of American politics, a period when politics is trivial and dehumanizing, when large challenges are either ignored or made worse, and when politics is an arena for invective. Virtually across the board, in both parties, political leadership ranges from mediocre to dismal. So Republicans and Democrats have contempt for each other. They can't work together to solve our common problems. And the most important, powerful political office in the world was recently occupied by a man who is intellectually, temperamentally, and morally unfit to be mayor of a small town, let alone president of the United States. To hold a uniformly negative view of politics is selective and misleading, and in important ways, it is simply wrong. It mistakenly assumes that our current predicament is a permanent condition. But just as a television series should not be judged by a single bad episode, just as a professional basketball player should not be judged by a single bad series, politics should not be judged by its worst moments. Certainly, American politics has seen moments of squalor, but our politics has also seen moments of grandeur. Most of the time, it's something in between. Here's the risk of allowing ourselves to be cynical. When we imagine that this nadir is the norm, we let ourselves and our leaders off the hook. We imply that there's no point in demanding better or in working to do better. In fact, it's precisely at a low point like this one that we should remind ourselves of the potential of politics, to better understand what has gone wrong, and to think more concretely about how to turn our politics around. We simply can't afford to settle for the reigning arguments that politics is beyond repair and our corrupt leaders and institutions are to blame. I would argue that by remembering and restoring America's noble political tradition, covering the roles of morality, religion, rhetoric, debate, and citizenship, we can heal what has been fractured and return to the task of making America a more perfect union. Much of the blame for our ugly and unfortunate state of affairs can be laid at the feet of politicians and the political class. Not everyone is culpable, of course, but as a general matter, our elites have been detached from the problems and creeping hopelessness that have overwhelmed many Americans. Rather than shaping events, Republican and Democratic lawmakers have often seemed at the mercy of them. The last several years have been characterized by unusual pessimism and a deep sense of unease and apprehension. We have witnessed a collapse of trust in government, particularly the federal government, and that loss of trust is in many important ways justified. In a self-governing nation, we generally get the government we deserve. Those who serve in public office have not been installed by some hostile alien force. It's ordinary Americans in congressional districts, in states, and in the nation as a whole who elect House members, senators, governors, and presidents. Your reaction to politicians as a class may be, to hell with them, but to hell with them really means to hell with us. It's just too easy for all of us to point the finger at others and never at ourselves, to assume that the troubles plaguing American politics have everything to do with other people and nothing to do with ourselves. The rancor and division in our politics reflect the rancor and division in our country. It's too facile to say we have a healthy country, but a broken political system. In fact, our broken political system reflects the brokenness of our country. But what's broken can be mended. We're not in the grip of forces we cannot control. We can reverse what has gone wrong and build on what has gone right. The wrong way to think about politics today is that we are collectively afflicted by a terminal disease, an illness with no cure. The better way to think about politics is that we are out of shape, the result of doing a lot of things wrong over the years. Shedding pounds and rebuilding muscle is difficult, but they can be done, and we know how to do them. It's a matter of summoning the requisite will, energy, and commitment. So while the task before us is not easy, it is partly beyond us. If we demand more of our politicians, by demanding more of ourselves, our politics will get better, and so will our country. But that requires us to assume the mantle of citizens. And that was Dr. Robert Brake from Ocean Park, Washington. Politics, a noble calling. And now, Stacey Abrams might justifiably be described as the most remarkable person in contemporary American politics. A black woman, she has mobilized blacks and whites in her native state of Georgia and throughout the USA, championing the right to vote without hindrance or corruption or prejudice. She wrote the following for the Washington Post. Our democracy faced a near-death experience. Here's how to revive it. The violent January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, coupled with ongoing threats to election officials, election workers, and lawmakers at all levels, represent unprecedented attacks on the foundation of our democracy. Certainly, President Donald Trump and others in his party who inspired the attacks must be held accountable through all available means. But accountability alone will not be nearly enough. Only meaningful reforms can undo the damage done and establish a government that is truly representative of the people. The next real test of our democracy comes now. Make no mistake, democracy may have survived this year, but President Biden and Vice President Harris were elected despite, not thanks to, weakened electoral systems. Together with the Democratic Congress, they now have the opportunity to implement reforms that reaffirm our nation's promise that our country represents and works for everyone. We must act before it is too late. Our democratic system faces extraordinary threats today because of sustained attacks from Republican leaders who throw up roadblocks to voting, and among the worst actors, stoke the flames of white supremacy and hyper-nationalism to cling to power. There can be no clearer example than the COVID-19 pandemic. The deaths of more than 500,000 people in the richest country in the world are symptomatic of a democracy in crisis and a political system that rewards cronyism over competence. Despite strong public support for the Centers for Disease Control's work, the Affordable Care Act, and other economic justice and safety net policies that could save lives, millions, nevertheless, continue to contract the disease without adequate access to health care. No thinking person can deny that the communities of color disproportionately suffering and dying from this pandemic are also the people whose votes and ability to hold failed leaders accountable has been continuously suppressed. The pandemic has been a collision of tragedy and corroded institutions, and the challenge is in how we respond. We can either engage in collective amnesia about what we have just lived through and leave an unaccountable government in place, or we can rise to meet this moment by fixing the broken social compact. Defeating Trump was not enough. Meaningful progress on health care, racial justice, and the economy requires aggressive action on voting rights, partisan gerrymandering, and campaign finance. One of the first steps must be an overhaul of the Senate filibuster, which has long been wielded as a cudgel against the needs of millions who struggle. Today, the parliamentary trick creates a more sinister threat to our nation, the ability of a minority of senators who represent 41.5 million fewer people than the Senate majority to block progress favored by most Americans. Democrats in Congress must fully embrace their mandate to fast-track democracy reforms that give voters a fair fight, rather than allowing undemocratic systems to be used as tools and excuses to perpetuate that same system. This is a moment of both historic imperative and, with united democratic control of the White House and Congress, historic opportunity. The agenda to restore democracy also includes passing the For the People Act to protect and expand voting rights, fight gerrymandering, and reduce the influence of money in politics. the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act to restore the full protection of the 1965 Voting Rights Act, and the Protecting Our Democracy Act to constrain the corruption of future presidents who deem themselves above the law. These landmark bills have broad base support and would have passed long ago were it not for obstructionist leaders who fear losing their own influence if the American people have more power of their own. Further, fixing our democracy requires we finally allow our fellow Americans in Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico, the vast majority of whom are people of color, to have full access to our democracy. That means D.C. statehood and binding self-determination for Puerto Rico. In the district, as white extremist mobs destroyed the Capitol, murdered a police officer, and threatened the lives of elected officials and residents, Washingtonians were left defenseless because D.C. is not a state and its chief executive had no authority to deploy the National Guard. Time is short. The forces standing against the democracy agenda seek to preserve and expand paths to power by shrinking the voting pool rather than winning voters over. In reaction to the historic turnout of 2020 and Democratic victories in places such as Georgia, already this year, more than 100 bills have been put forward in state legislatures seeking to restrict voting access. Those efforts will not end without a fight. We don't know how many changes we will get to reverse our democracy's near-death experience. We must not waste this one. We must go big. The future of democracy demands it. And that was Stacey Abrams. Our democracy faced a near-death experience. Here's how to revive it. Stacey Abrams is a Democrat, a former minority leader of the Georgia House of Representatives, and founder of the group Fair Fight. And now, a poem by Carolyn Dunn, Invasive Species. Black mold has invaded every corner, ridge, and indent of the front door window molding. Frogs expire by the pondful from the encroachment of a fungus in their lungs. Words fly in a startling way. Habitat loss, sewer overflows, suburban runoff, water pollutants, airborne contaminants, industrial wastes, poisons in the food chain, gigantic dead zones, rampant algae growth, land as national sacrifice. But of all invasions, the invasion which we embody has hogtied us within a human procreation frenzy. The unexamined question, between elections, between one day and the next, between high water and hell. And that was Invasive Species by Carolyn Dunn. This is Michael McCusker. Dylan Hauser Schalk is engineer for this program. Exactly a month from today, April 4th, the real deal, traditional vernal resurrection celebrated by believers and pagans alike. The Easter Bunny rises again. March is Women's History Month in the USA. This coming Monday, March 8th, is International Women's Day. For the first time in its history, a woman has been elected vice president of the USA, and she is a racially mixed woman, Black and Indo-Asian. The possibility of a woman president looms, perhaps this woman, Kamala Harris, in 2024. For that matter, the possibilities for a man or a woman of various multiples to breach the White House door are limitless. Our own near descendants might overcome extreme prejudice and elect a multiracial, transgender atheist as president. I would especially like to see a Native American president. You know the drill. Lock down and mask up. Remember, mask it or casket, as Bobby Whitman says.
signs. You pour yourself over me like the sun through the blinds. You lift me up and get me out. Keep me walking but never shout. Hold the secret close, I hear you say.
The pace, look for